It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
Full house today, boys and girls. It's always fun. So if you can, stick around for the hour. I'd like to welcome everybody back. If you've been a regular, we're starting out year 12 about a month ago. And as I always like to remind you, if you keep listening, we'll keep talking. So we come back over and over again as long as you do. Well, some things have happened since 1 week ago this minute, and they're far-reaching in their impact. I don't think it's going to, this is my personal opinion, I don't think it's going to change the history books very much. There's something that's got to happen, and then hopefully we get back to normal. But I'll let the guys issue their feelings about that, because my perspective at my age is probably a little different than theirs. But it was, I try to come up with a word or a phrase that describes the week really well. And this week, I narrowed it down to one thing. Wednesday was fun.
Yeah.
That's it. So on that happy note, take it away.
Yeah, so it was a really interesting week. Obviously, something new dominated the headlines, and it's almost like, wait, what AI apocalypse? What were we talking about last week? It certainly wasn't Iran, but this week that's what we were talking about, and it was dominating every headline and the trading as well. And interestingly, every trade that was working in the first half of 2020 or first part of 2026 did almost the exact opposite this week. So if you were up big going into through February of 2026, you probably did not have a great week, and vice versa is also true. Look at software if you want a good example. It fell more than 30% from its all-time high into the end of February, and it's now rallied almost 14% in just over a week. So interesting the way things work out, and also counterintuitive, because what about a war in Iran would create a software buying opportunity? I can't follow that logic. It just doesn't seem to make any sense. This week we saw the Dow fall 3%, the S&P down 2%, and the NASDAQ 1.2%. And a lot of that was on fears of the higher cost of oil, and also another potential forever war in the Middle East. The price of oil spiked 30%, one of the biggest weekly moves in history. And interestingly, energy company stocks gained just 1.4%, which kind of signals to me that traders don't believe that this oil price spike is going to last for very long, because I think you would have seen energy companies move a lot more if that were the case. The worst performing asset classes this week were silver, which dropped 10%. Again, something that had been rallying almost uncontrollably for the last year. International stocks, which dropped 7%. International stocks had really led the market higher over the last year. And then emerging markets were also hit pretty hard, much worse than developed countries. They were down 8.2%, which was it was a pretty uniform sell-off all around. One bright spot, ironically, was the Israeli market, which gained 6.2%. So
go figure.
I cannot explain that.
Can you explain the comfort trade of gold and silver? Down, but dramatically.
Down dramatically, exactly.
This is going contrary to our intuition, which is why I deduced it was temporary.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's good logic or not.
I think there's some of that. I think it also reveals just the amount. If you look at like the last few years, the movement from Bitcoin to gold to silver to now oil, there's a lot of retail play money that's just flying around. I think it's not the whole story, but it's hard to say that it's not a part of the story.
It's the flavor of the month club.
Yeah, they just jump around.
Within the S&P, materials, healthcare, and consumer staples were the hardest hit areas. Typically, those are some of the defensive sectors of the. So when things get rough, that's where people go normally, and they were all down more than 5%. Outside of energy, technology was the only other sector to remain positive for the week, just slightly. Bitcoin had a good week. It really needed it. It gained 5%, but it was down more than 25% going into March. And commodities had a good week despite gold and silver falling. The commodities basket gained over 9% this week. Bonds got hit by spiking yields, and the aggregate bond market lost more than 1%. 10-year spike from about 3.9 to 4.1. I think that move could turn around just as quickly as it happened if this thing gets resolved in a relatively short timeline, a matter of weeks. If you're looking for reasons to be optimistic, the pattern that the market most often follows after geopolitical events like the Iran war that we're currently in is pretty well established. Short term, the market falls on the news, but in the longer term, the market tends to recover and rally to new highs. And it really doesn't take that long. Also, the market opened down more than 1% three times this week. On Monday, it erased all of that gain to end positive. Tuesday, it erased all of that loss, but it took until Wednesday afternoon to do it. And then Friday, we didn't recoup the complete loss, but recouped about half of it. And that was with oil sitting at $90 per barrel. Historically, weeks that see 3-1% gaps down come very near market bottoms more often than not. And so not that history is a perfect guide, but that is a pretty good thing that you're seeing that kind of trading action. Could signal that we are near a market bottom. 1 year later, the market has an average gain of over 19% when we see weeks like this. So that would not be a bad thing.
Nope.
It was an interesting week for economic data, to say the least. Up until Friday, the news was looking pretty positive. Then on Friday, we got a jobs report that looked, there's no way to hide it. It was pretty ugly. The estimate was for 50,000 jobs to be created, and instead the economy shed 92,000 jobs. So it didn't even, instead of going positive 50, it ended up negative 92. Plus, the previous reports were revised down by 69,000, so that didn't help. The unemployment rate also ticked up to 4.4%, which is historically still pretty good. It's just that's not the right direction. One bit of good news from the report was that wages continued to grow at about 4% year over year, which is outpacing inflation by a decent amount. Despite that bad news on Friday, during the week we saw some pretty good numbers. The ISM manufacturing report showed a strong 52.4 expansion level reading, and the services report was an even better 56.1, well into expansion territory. The ADP private payrolls report showed an increase of 63,000 private jobs during the month. So that jobs number was not so bad. I don't know.
Yeah. That was distributed strangely, too. The smallest, the companies that employ 1 to 19 people, that's where most of the gain was. So it looks to me like people are reorienting themselves to do something different or go to work, get a gig, whatever. But I can't back that up with other data. Just usually what happens there. Also, the very largest companies made a nice gain. But people look at the manufacturing number, and that was down again. But if you look at the construction number, that was huge.
It was a big number.
And what have we been saying ever since Trump got in? That first you build the thing, and then you operate the thing. So construction wins first, and manufacturing wins second. Plus a lot of the people that are going to be hired in manufacturing are actually robots. Manufacturing is not going to employ the same number of people that it did in the past. And that's pretty much a given because there's no reason not to automate everything you can when you're starting a new factory or retrofitting one. All right, lots more to say about this topic and many others. We've got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And I remind everybody that lines are open, 904-222-8255. And that, as usual, we have a trivia question. And also, as usual, sponsored by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can call Paul at 904-636-7888. This one's about big business. Everybody knows about Coca-Cola. It's kind of ubiquitous across the world, actually. But long, long time ago, when they were just getting their start, the guy who was running the show had an idea that he didn't want to get involved in bottling because it made things needlessly complex. He just wanted to make Coca-Cola. So he sold the bottling department of the company, and I want to know for how much. just a number of dollars. You can round it any way you want to. But it was a while back. And then we'll see if it was a good decision or not. All right, anyway, back to the market. I want to bring one thing up before I turn it back to Adam. I always like the perspective during a really heavy down week of what did we give back time-wise. The Dow was this low, below this, last on December 2nd. The NASDAQ was November 21st. The S&P 500 goes back to December 17th. And the small cap Russell 2000 goes back to January 2nd. So we gave back that much time. You know how long it's going to take to reclaim it when this is over?
Depends.
It won't be 3 months, I don't think. But, of course, nobody knows until after. That's why I always estimate after it's done and I've calculated it. Never miss that way. Pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, if you have an investor's mindset, it just doesn't really matter when it happens, right? It's not going to be 25 years.
Yeah, and we talked about that last week. We said, who's planning to sell out on Monday if it starts going straight down? And then, of course, Wednesday we had the big up day, and then we had another down day. You can't time this stuff.
Yeah, I think it's always the case that it's harder for traders to figure out what to do. But if you're a real investor, it's just things happen constantly.
Yeah, you got a long-term horizon. All right, Adam, you want to wrap up anything else? I just got a few words about the jobs numbers when you're ready.
No, the only thing I would mention is retail sales on Friday. Also, they were down 0.2%, but the estimate was actually negative 0.3%, so they came in higher than expected. It wasn't a blowout number, but they are up 3.2% versus a year ago, which is not bad. And if you get rid of autos, which are highly volatile, up 3.9% in the past year, so not bad.
Well, in those jobs reports, there's some things that you probably wouldn't notice, and I'm not trying to justify anything or create a situation like, well, don't believe your ears and your eyes and all that for the administration, but there has been a strike by Kaiser Permanente. And there were several, I think there are about 32,000 healthcare workers that are striking and therefore were not on the rolls. So those are jobs lost temporarily. That's one of them. And at the end of every year, they recalculate the population of the country and make adjustments to the 2000 census. And this happened, as usual, in January, except for the fact that they didn't get it done because of the strike, the government shutdown. And therefore, by the time they got the numbers, it was too late to do January. So they actually applied those changes for the February numbers that we just got. And what that means is a comparison between January and February is relatively meaningless, and a comparison between December and January is relatively meaningless. And the next number we get, which will be March jobs, will be more meaningful. These were not inconsequential changes. The population change for people aged 16 and up was 231,000, but the adjustment increased the number of people not in the labor force by 1.2 million and decreased both the total civilian labor force and the number of employed people by 1.4 million. And that all took place in these numbers. What does it mean? I don't know. It means next week I'm going to trust them a little bit more. But the three of us were talking in the break, and I concur. We're in a kind of a holding pattern in the job market from what anybody can see, and I don't see any reason it's going to change right away.
Lots of uncertainty out there.
Yeah, there is. Now, we've got a big graduating class coming up in May from the colleges, and they all hit the labor force as they graduate, and will the jobs be there for them? I don't know.
I don't know either, but I do know that the narrative around young people unemployment rate is largely false. The numbers don't back it up. There's actually been the labor force, the percentage of people that age getting jobs is roughly equivalent to where it was 2 years ago. And so this narrative that it's gotten worse and worse for grads just hasn't really played out yet. But this year could be different.
Yeah, well, and I think the counter narrative is coming from certain pockets where we see like entry-level coder jobs are significantly down.
Sure.
Big tech, like in 2022 was hiring like 36% or something, and now it's like 5% of entry level jobs. And so I think if you went into certain vocations thinking you were heading in the right direction, you're now seeing, okay, the landscape is changing, and it hasn't fully changed for people to know where to aim.
Yeah, and look what's happening in places like Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, AI is having an impact. It is not having its full impact yet, but it is definitely having an impact.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
The more automatable, it sounds a terrible word, any job that can be turned over to AI is going to be turned over. Because they're all paying for the AI anyway. So it depends when you graduate, what degree you have and what knowledge you have, what experience you have. They're all going to play into whether or not you'll get a job and how much you'll make.
And if you look away from entry level, the amount of job opportunities for higher level software related jobs has actually increased year over year beyond the average over the last several years. So, and the thought there is with AI, the output of a senior level coder or developer is two or three times what it used to be. So they're actually getting paid more and they have more opportunities.
Right. That's called efficiency. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. It keeps prices of things down. All right. My last comment on the jobs report, 10,000 of those losses were the federal government. Those are the good ones. We don't want any more of that. The total says right here, and this is from PJ Media, 386,000 federal jobs have left under Trump.
Yeah, that's a record, isn't it?
And the other record is, and no one noticed.
Hmm. Yeah.
Badly missed, except those affected, of course.
Well,
I bet the DMV noticed.
Yeah, probably. But anyway.
I remember us citing some data at the time when it was Doge was really firing off, that was, no pun intended, I guess.
Yeah, actually announced layoffs are at an all-time high. But I thought that was interesting. 386,000 people go and just barely a blip on the radar screen. Good for him, I say. All right. I don't want to – I got one for right after the break. I want to ask Joey, because Joey's really good on taxes, and I want to run this past him and see if I'm right, because I'm pretty sure I am.
I've got a short story that of a client situation that happened this week that I think
let's
would
do
be
that.
Useful.
We got about 3 minutes left before
yeah,
the break.
That's plenty of time. So if you've listened to the show for a while, you know that required minimum distributions are something that you don't want to miss when you reach that age. The penalties for failing to distribute the mandated amount from a retirement account each year can be hefty. Up to 25% of the missed amount can be, that's the penalty, plus ordinary income taxes on the amount distributed. If you listen regularly, you may also know that one of the best tools we employ with clients to satisfy required minimum distributions is something called a qualified charitable distribution. For newer listeners, these are gifts that you give directly from your IRA to a charity, and gifting this way has two primary benefits. Number one, the gifted amounts satisfy a portion of your required minimum distribution amount for the year, and number two, the gifted amounts don't count as taxable income on your tax return. This helps in a multitude of ways. Number one, you're eliminating some income tax, but number two, for that three-headed beast of Irma, you're lowering income, so you're not going to see, you have a lesser chance of seeing higher Medicare premiums. So this week, we had a call from our custodian notifying us that a qualified charitable distribution we did for a high net worth client did not reach its destination. And this could be a big deal because we did that amount to satisfy part of that RMD, and we counted on that. And so we got this notice. And thanks to the resources available to us, we were able to work with that team to get another check issued. It was lost in the mail.
Oh.
And the check was reissued with the original date for last year. And so it just goes to the charity. And this is one of those things, like it could have been thousands of dollars in taxes, thousands of dollars in penalty, a couple of, you know, not our favorite phone calls. But thanks to these kind of systematic relationships we've got based on the size that we're at, we got a notice and we were able to fix it. And I just think this is one of those things that's really easy to overlook, but logistical errors are going to happen, especially when you're counting on the mail to get things done these days. And I was just kind of excited that, you know, what could have been a big deal was really a 10-minute phone call series, and it was handled.
Yeah, I read a couple stories about that kind of thing happening just recently, that's the first time
it happens. It's happened to us before.
Really?
I just handled it, but yeah, it happens more often than you would think because the charity may get the check and then sit on it for a while and, mm-hmm. for inexplicably, or there's just countless ways that this can happen. And another thing, if you're doing QCDs, you have to have documentation from the charity that they received the check and yeah. that the contribution was made. If you get audited, they will want that, and you cannot go back to the charity and request it at that time. You have to already have it. So just be aware of that little tidbit.
Yeah, the quick and dirty on that one that I read was, as long as you did not take the money yourself and then write a check to the charity, that if a problem occurs with the timing or the handling or whatever, that they are most likely to tell you, you're fine, don't worry about it, we'll do exactly what you guys said. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of consistent with what I know, or what I think to be their policy anyway. All right, we got to take a quick break again. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we have Marshall on the line, but I want to repeat the question first. I'm getting a buzzing.
Yeah, me too.
We're all getting it.
There we go.
Yeah, working on it. Thank you. All right. Question, the trivia question for today. The Coca-Cola company, a long time ago, decided to sell off their bottling division because it was making things too complicated. How much did it sell for? Real simple. Good morning, Marshall.
Good morning, gentlemen. Let's go for $100,000.
Let's not. It was less than that.
Okay.
Wow.
But thank you.
Let Marshall down easy.
See, but we went from an infinite universe to a nice tight range.
Well, I'm just trying to help out. Just trying to help out my radio family.
Yeah. Yeah, that way nobody calls it and looks ridiculous because they were going to guess $200 million, and that's actually under $100,000.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So. Understood.
You did them a favor.
Joey and Adam are of those that learned so much about automated systems early in life to carry it a lot more, whereas Steve and I learned much later in life, and I have a thought that probably most of your audience is more in Steve and my contemporary, and that's why my question.
Okay.
What have y'all done to educate yourselves on using AI, and what do you use and what do you use it for?
Okay, good question. But we do use it. We use it for several things. The main one is that we've implemented an AI note taker for our meetings. And it is one that's customized to the financial services industry, financial planning industry. And it is, I can honestly say, it's pretty amazing. It not only takes notes, that's nice, so you have a record of everything you talk about, but it allows us to interact with our clients more and spend less time writing down details that we're inevitably going to miss some of them. So we have better conversations. And then on top of that, it picks out key pieces of information, puts them in a very user-friendly chart. It suggests updates to our financial planning software. It puts the notes into our CRM for compliance. I mean, it just is a huge time saver. So that's the main thing. The other thing we use it for primarily is research and prep for radio, for writing different communications. I don't use it and put that out as my own work, but in order to get ready to do something, like if I'm preparing a segment for the radio now, I first go to AI and say what I want and see what it comes up with, and then that gives me a good basis to create my own product. It probably cuts my time in half for prep.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary. I think the big distinction is we use it for things that help us elevate our ability to participate in the human side of financial planning. So we'll use AI to help us gather, organize, and prepare information and store it the right way. We distinctly do not use it to make decisions. It doesn't automate any, we don't have it making any decisions for us.
Absolutely not.
We're trying to use it in a way that helps us do the background stuff and be more prepared and more efficient in that regard so that we can make good decisions with more organized information.
Well, thank you. I specifically had asked somebody else who does a lot of legal research, and he has his different pieces, but he threw out something I'd never thought about. He asks AI to suggest a script to find the information he wants to find.
Nice. I like it.
Seems redundant.
Is there any particular AI generically that y'all find easier for you to use or you've gotten more comfortable with?
I think we've each got our like kind of preferred tools. I enjoy using Gemini.
I use Gemini as well.
And the more you use a particular tool, the more it learns about you. So it kind of communicates better with you. There's some risk in that. You can kind of create your own echo chamber. So you got to push the limits on it a little bit and remind it how broadly you want perspectives. But
yeah, I use it far less than the guys do because, you know, I'm not that involved as I used to be. And it's all new, but I am taking some online courses,
but you,
short things.
You may actually be using it more than you think, because if you do a Google search now, one of the main things that pops up is the AI summary. Mm-hmm. And I find that to be the best result many times, more often than not. Yeah.
When Sarah sends an email over to me because she read something that I might like, she'll send it over, and the first thing I get in my email is a little AI summary of what it is.
Definitely.
I really like that.
Yeah, and people use AI a lot more than they realize. Like the other day, Elizabeth and I were watching some show about a female chess master from Hungary. It was on Netflix. I forget. Queen of Chess, I think. It was great. And so I downloaded some chess app, and I realized, you know, the whole teaching mechanism in the app is AI-based. You know, it's not old school algorithms. It's like an active thinking, you know, so it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, I think what we're in right now is a time period where the rate of change is still accelerating.
For sure.
It's got a long ways to go.
Great. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Well, thank you, Marshall.
Good call, Marshall. Thank you.
It's a great question. I do have some fear that there are going to be people out there who tend to use it as a crutch or a pen or something. And I'm not saying they will lose their ability to think and reason, but I'm saying just make sure you're keeping your own brain moving and pay attention to your business and so on.
I have contacts who have said that, you know, whatever company they work for and hires marketing agencies and things like that to do big projects for them, and they make a lot of money. And multiple times they've received entire proposals, I mean, 20, 30, 40 pages that are paid heavily for, and it's completely AI generated and it's crap.
Ridiculous.
So,
yeah.
You know, this is just entry level or, you know, low level people being lazy.
My kids say they're surprised by how many kids are just lazy now. They don't do their homework. They just have AI. They turn in AI stuff, and it's just, you know, they just don't want to do the work.
Human nature, maybe.
I guess.
Well, anyway, as I said, great question. Thanks, Marshall. Always fun to hear from him. Marshall's one of those guys that is a thinker, and, you know, he looks at the world and he ponders things, and he's much like me that way, and only he is not reticent to put it out on the table. Mm-hmm. We always appreciate that. You know, though, only 5% of listeners will ever call a radio station, and I always like the ones who aren't afraid to do so. All right. One of the things I don't like people who supposedly write facts about finance and economics. Oh, I'll get back to this after the break because good morning, Bob.
Good morning, gentlemen.
What's happening?
Oh, not a whole lot. Just enjoying another beautiful day in Jacksonville. A question for you on RMDs.
Yeah.
Shoot.
My wife turned 73 in December.
Now, you're in trouble now.
Yeah, we have until, April 1st we have to take an RMD?
There's April 1st. When did she turn?
December.
December of last year.
And she didn't take one last year.
Yeah, she has until April 1st of 26.
Exactly. And then another one by December of 26.
Yeah, right. So you'll actually have two this year.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to confirm that. That's kind of what I was afraid of, but okay, no problem.
I wish there were a better way to do this, because there's a penalty involved in doing that. The plus of it is you pushed your taxes forward till this year.
But the
downside is you have to take two RMDs based on last year's closing balance on December 31, mm-hmm. which did not get depleted by the amount of the first RMD. So you get a penalty, a tax penalty, for having it to be bigger than it would be otherwise.
Yeah, it's not a true penalty, but it's a
it's a de facto penalty.
Yeah.
An extra tax.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can see that.
But for a lot of people, it's a good thing because they do get to move their taxes forward. So it depends on your income and all kinds of other things.
Now, if you give to charity, I mean, that's a good – there's a couple of tools you have at your disposal. You could give to a qualified charitable distribution from mm-hmm. the IRA, maybe a bigger one this year and skip next year or something to fight some of that off.
All true. So, yep.
Good idea.
You nailed it.
All right. Well, great. Thank you for the info.
Did you want to take a shot at the trivia, Bob?
Oh, let's see. Less than 100,000?
Yes.
Unbelievable. But I would say 60,000.
That is a bit too high.
Wow.
Wow.
Just keeps getting better, doesn't it?
It's really unreal.
Unbelievable. Well, thanks, guys.
Have a good one.
Our pleasure. Yep, thanks for the call.
If it goes much lower, it's going to be like 1 year of daycare for a Bob.
Yeah, no kidding. No, Bob mentioned what a beautiful day it was out there. And I had to, the place was busy this morning. I had to park quite a ways away. And I took the slowest walk from the car to the building I've ever taken. It was perfect.
It's perfect out.
72, really sunny, and absolutely perfect. So I don't want anybody to think we are not all grateful. All right, I'm going to get back into the tax thing. But I wanted to, I'm going to log this one into things that never die. So Ro Khanna, congressman from California, is joining Bernie Sanders now in wanting to tax the wealthy on their wealth, but not the old-fashioned way. The original one was 1% a year for 5 years. This is 5% a year. And guess who signed onto the program? Tall, dark, and handsome governor idiot.
Did he sign on?
Newsom supports it. One of the few decisions he's ever actually made, and it was the exact one.
Are you sure? He's been anti-wealth
tax. Yeah, he's been pushing back on the SIE.
Just this week. It was amazing to me. Yeah. All right, I will have to take a break and be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
I'm Adam VanWee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And I remind everybody, the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question: years ago, Coca-Cola sold off its bottling division. What did they get for it? And we know it's under $60,000. Sounds like a bargain to me. All right, let's talk about bad journalism, or should I just say bias? I wanted Joey to hear this one, because this is what I think. That Social Security faces earlier depletion date, a report found. And that doesn't surprise me. They're saying 2032, and the current thinking was 2033, and, you know, it was always in that range. But there are some things that have made it a little bit different. But this claims that part of it was on the OBBBA, the One Big Beautiful Bill, causing a revenue shortage into the Social Security Trust Fund from income tax on benefits. Well, I know why they say it. They say it because Trump touts the no tax on Social Security. But that's not what happened.
No, I don't think that's what they're getting at. I think they're talking about if you don't tax tips and overtime, technically there's a small amount of that money that would have gone to Social Security. Is it enough to change the date on the depletion of the fund? I really, really doubt it.
But did they even remove payroll tax on that?
That I don't know. That's because
I don't
question.
Think.
Oh,
they
didn't.
They just removed federal. So the case, then there's nothing.
It's all payroll.
There's
tax.
Zero.
Yeah, you're right.
Zero change. You're just in the same growing economy as far as revenue for that trust as there was.
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah,
these people either aren't smart enough to write an article like this, or they're too biased to write an article like this. But what happens with the no tax on Social Security is that became a statement, a selling point, of I don't know what you want to call it, but that if you're 65 and up, you don't even have to be taking Social Security. For these 4 years, anyway, each person that's 65 by the end of the year gets an extra $6,000 tax deduction, and you don't have to itemize to get it. You just get it. So seniors actually got a tax break, a guaranteed tax break, because they get the extra $6,000 or $12,000 for the couple. But it's not about Social Security. It just applies to people old enough for Social Security. And like I said, they're either not smart enough to know it or they're too biased. But this article should never have been written, at least not the way it was.
Agreed. Adam Carolla says it all the time. You're either stupid or you're a liar. Which is it?
Yeah, which is it? Exactly.
Well, sadly, the intended impact will probably be achieved for the article. I mean, that's just the way it works.
Yeah.
It's wrong, but it doesn't matter that it's wrong.
Yeah, by reducing income taxes paid by seniors. That's okay, people, but I told you. Good morning, Bosco.
Yes, it is a fabulous one at that.
I haven't seen any better than this.
At your trivia.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go for tossing this back and forth. This is just like throwing horseshoes. $25,000.
And that, unfortunately, is a little too high.
Low. Oh my! Wow. It is a year of daycare.
I get such a charge out of trivia questions that surprise people because it surprises me when I find them.
That's crazy.
Then I bring it in here.
It sounds like they could have recycled the bottles for the price.
No kidding. Anyway, thanks. I appreciate the call. Anything else we can do for you today?
No. The weather you piped in here was fabulous. It's fabulous.
I'm taking credit.
What a great show.
Thanks, Bosco.
Take care. Thanks.
Ciao.
Yeah. I don't think anybody here would have guessed. Maybe I'm wrong. Don't know. Anyway, I wanted to bring that up. It happens to this administration a lot. People want to find a reason. They hate him so much. They want to find a reason that he's bad, and they want everybody to know who it is and what it is. All right. Anyway, next topic. You all, at least regular listeners, will probably remember that I have talked about Kyle Busch and his wife having a problem with Pacific Life, and they lost over $8 million, and they have sued Pacific Life. And I said I'd follow up when it's done. They settled. And unfortunately, the nature of a lawsuit that settled usually involves not having to divulge the amount. But the point I'm getting here is not anything other than this, and it could be Pac Life, it could be anybody buying a product. They were sold apparently a very large package of the supposedly tax-free retirement plans that are actually self-funded insurance policies. And there are several people out there that peddle these things, and they are, I'm going to say it, they're a scam. What they do, because of the nature of their regulation, they will sell these things with what are called illustrations. And that shows your cash flow out into perpetuity, but they're allowed to put their own assumptions in. So you might have something like this where the guy showed them what would happen if they had annual returns of 9.5%.
Sounds like any public pension.
Yeah.
Where they say, hey, we're going
to... I would love to sell our products on the last 3 years of market returns.
Yeah.
That would be pretty easy.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're going to have to be a little bit more careful pretty soon. Yeah, I will promise you that they got their 8.6 back. Because, you know, he's got a big microphone. He's a very famous driver. And if he didn't like the settlement and they kept going on this thing, he'd be singing it from the treetops. So I'm sure they got what they deserve. That's called failure to supervise your agents, where I come from.
Yeah. I mean, I doubt that they lost 8.6 million, though. It was probably just your 8.6. If the guy sold it at 9.5% returns and it got three.
Yeah, they actually lost.
How did they lose?
They lost nearly 8.6 through an indexed universal life insurance strategy.
I was waiting for those words. I knew that was that policy.
Yeah.
Wow.
I just had a client talk to me this week. Like, they have a friend in quotes, that won't leave him alone about how they need to buy this.
Yep.
And it's like, look, there's a time and a place for those policies. And then once you have it, you have to nurture it a very specific way.
Yes.
And you need to understand how to couch the guarantee or the illustrations, as you said, in reality. Those cases are almost exclusively very high net worth, which if this guy was a proper case, he may not have been guided on how to nurture the policy the right way to get the intended outcomes. Or if the illustrations were just a lie, I didn't see them.
But. Well, if you lost 8.6, you have to think that
that's
what
he was
account. Putting in was a really large amount.
One of the problems outside of this article is these are being peddled to everybody. I mean, if you're on TikTok, they call it FinTok. I mean, it's everywhere. I'm not on there, but I've got friends who send me videos all the time, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, how do you get this garbage out of their feed?
Yeah, it truly is garbage.
I debunked my first case for a lady that was our neighbor across the street back before I was a CFP. And it took me a day or two to figure out what the problem was. And you knew, you could just read it, and you know there's a problem here. And what this guy wanted him to do was take a big old line of credit on their house and put it into the policy. Oh, and then he showed all the cash flows, except one. He never showed that you have to pay back the line of credit. And I showed her that, and she went ballistic.
Yeah, Dave Ramsey is incendiary.
Yes.
That story. That is the opposite of the Ramsey. Yep. We're not all Ramsey, but he's right on stuff like that.
Yep. All right. Long time ago, it was around 1899, he thought the bottling process was going to be too cumbersome and complicated. So he sold it to a couple lawyers in Nashville, and they paid him $1 for the business. Now, last year, they produced more than 30 billion cases of Coca-Cola. Nice investment.
Yeah.
I love it. Another little tidbit I found in the same article, the classic Coke bottle, there's 7-ounce Coke that we always got out of machines for a dime, and they say Coca-Cola all over them in relief. Those bottles were specifically designed so that they'd be recognizable if they were dropped and shattered. Isn't that interesting? Just by the logos and the relief on them.
So they could still be a marketing piece after?
Yeah. It's amazing to me. Oh, he didn't do too bad either, though. Coke did okay, even though they fired out their bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just got such a big kick out of that. Let's see. In a related item, not to Coca-Cola, regulators are now starting to look into indexed annuity sellers who are doing things just like we were describing, and comments are due on these regulations by March 31. I will keep you all informed as to what happens here. These people are a blight on the financial services industry, and they have to be stopped. It's all because state regulators are horrible regulators. And I hate to say it, some are better than others, but there is going to be some more federal regulation in this industry because the states are not doing a good enough job. That's my opinion alone. But that's the way it is right here today. What's the real value of hiring a CFP? That's another one. You know what you get? Aside from returns that are 2 or 3% better, you're better off financially in your own mind and on paper. The psychology makes everyone feel better. 18% higher in promoting their planning to friends. So if you're good at this, you get a lot of referrals, which we know. And the factor was friends and family felt better about the family money. And the kids get more involved. All good reasons. I love it. We'll see you next week. Enjoy this beautiful day. This is